part of my talk is on outposts, which are similar to settlements in that they are incidents of Jewish Israelis living illegally on Palestinian land, one of the main differences are the people who choose to live in these outposts. So I talked before about what I call economic settlers, moving to the territories for financial benefits, and they represent about 80% of the settler population, a vast majority that says, according to polls, that they would be willing to leave if they were offered financial compensation. So when Israel says it's impossible to make all of these hundreds of thousands of settlers leave, remember that the vast majority are there simply because the government is paying them to do so. The remaining 20% of the settler population are often called ideological settlers, moving to the territories not for money, but because of their beliefs. And many of them believe that the land in the West Bank and Gaza belongs to the Jewish people, for oftentimes religious reasons or maybe political reasons. And according to many of these people, the Palestinians are the ones who are occupying this land, Jewish land. And so they will actually come in the middle of the night with trailers and simply establish themselves on a plot of Palestinian land and say, we're not leaving, you know, this land belongs to us. Well, a farmer wakes up the next morning and there's an outpost on his land, and while the Israeli government says that it doesn't condone this kind of practice, it doesn't do a whole lot to prevent the settlers from coming or to make them leave. And so over time, these outposts begin to grow. More settlers move into them. Eventually, they want a school for their children. They want a fence around them for security. They want a road to connect them to Israel. And over time, what you have is it's no longer an outpost. It's a new settlement. And that's the way a lot of these settlements were originally founded and grew into what they are today. And once they become settlements and recognized by the Israeli government as such, they become subsidized by the Israeli government, which means subsidized by the U.S. government, by us. The U.S. government gives Israel between 3 and 5 billion American tax dollars every year. That's more than $10 million every single day. That is going towards upholding these illegal practices. And you know, this may seem like something kind of on the other side of the world, has nothing to do with us as Americans, but we are the ones paying for this. You know, we have a right, we have a responsibility to know where our tax dollars are going and to ensure that they are not being used to violate human rights, international law, and even US law. Here's a few pictures of outposts. This one is above the village of Yanun, and oftentimes they're placed on hilltops for sort of strategic reasons. Here's the village of Yanun, a Palestinian village of about 300 people. Here's one of the homes in the village, and again you can see up top there the outpost. And as I mentioned before, a lot of the settlers living in these outposts don't really think the Palestinians have any right to be where they are. And so they'll actually come down with large weapons even to try and threaten the villagers, to try to make them leave their homes and land. And here's a picture of one of these armed settlers that's come down to threaten a villager picking her olives. In the past, these settlers have beaten up numerous villagers. They've poked a young boy's eye out of his face. They've beaten an old woman with her walking stick. They've killed a villager. They've stolen olives. Keep in mind, of course, that Palestinians in this part of the world are not allowed to have any kind of weapons. Now, clearly, some Palestinians do manage to get weapons. We hear about it in the media, but the vast majority of Palestinians don't. They don't have anything to defend themselves with besides stones or their bodies. Meanwhile, Israeli soldiers and civilians, these settlers, are oftentimes carrying around these large weapons. So that's the kind of balance of power that you feel going into the territories. The settlers have burned the village generator so that the Yanun villagers didn't have any more electricity. And this is the Yanun water source where settlers have come down, they've urinated in the water source, they've poisoned it with dead chickens, anything to try to make the villagers leave. And at the end of 2002, the village of Yanun came together to make a decision about this issue. And what they decided was that they were going to leave. They decided to abandon their ancestral homes and land because they felt so threatened by the settler presence. And one day they picked up and left, all 300 of them. Well, the international and Israeli peace communities heard about what had happened in Yanun and went to the villagers staying in a nearby town with an offer. And what we said was, if you choose to return to your homes and your land, we will commit to maintaining a constant presence of international and Israeli peace activists to live with you in your community for as long as you want us there. We will bear witness to these crimes. We will document them, try to get them into the media. We will stand beside you in solidarity should those settlers attack. And about a third of the villagers accepted our offer and have come back to their homes, almost up 100 of them. And living along with them now are these international and Israeli peace activists. And this is a picture of one of those activists. His name's David. He's a friend of mine. And David was actually the victim of a particularly brutal settler attack in which he was beaten to a pulp in his face, which shows that the settlers will attack not only Palestinians, but internationals and Israelis who are there in solidarity with those farmers. But David continues to do wonderful work in the Palestinian territories. He's recovering, and he is a citizen of Israel, a Jewish Israeli, and one of many Israeli activists that I've had the privilege to work with in Palestine. Now, it's very important for people to distinguish between what it means to be Jewish, someone from the Jewish religion or culture, like myself, what it means to be Israeli, a citizen of the State of Israel, and what it means to be a Zionist, someone who supports the idea of an exclusively Jewish state. These are three separate categories. There is some overlap, but they are not the same thing. It's very important to distinguish. There are Jewish people who are not Israeli, like myself. There are Israelis who are not Jewish. 20% of the Israeli population is Palestinian. There are Jews who are not Zionists. There are Zionists who are not Jewish. The increasingly influential Christian Zionist movement in this country. And it's very dangerous when these ideas become conflated because people start associating them as equal, such that people are afraid of standing up against what Israel's doing because they're afraid that would make them an anti-Semite or a Nazi or something. And it's absurd. It's crazy. You know, occupation and oppression have nothing to do with Judaism. And to criticize these things is not anti-Semitic. So it's important to keep these things separate in our minds. Here you can see a Jewish Israeli, a rabbi from a group called Rabbis for Human Rights, planting an olive tree alongside a Palestinian farmer. Here you can see an Israeli activist protesting the policies of her government alongside Palestinian colleagues in the resistance. In Israel, all Jewish men and women are required to serve in the military, but there have been thousands of Israelis that have stood up and said, we refuse to take part in this institution, and they're known as the Refuseniks. And I have to say that in Israel, there's a much higher tolerance for debate and dissent on this issue than you find in the United States. In Israeli newspapers, you'll find much more candid descriptions of the occupation than in U.S. mainstream newspapers, where sometimes it's even taboo to use the word occupation. But in Israel, actually, the majority of the people are opposed to the settlements and opposed to the occupation as it is right now. So a lot of times, people in the United States feel like they have to support the Israeli government in order to support the Jewish people or the Israeli people. And they don't realize that, just like in the United States, there are Americans that don't always support what part of their government may do. There are Israeli citizens that don't support the Israeli government. And actually, a very telling statistic shows that that it is 5 times more likely for an Israeli soldier to commit suicide than to be killed in a terrorist attack. And so when people talk about this occupation as helping the Jewish people, they don't realize how many Israelis are actually against it and how important it is for the Jewish people as well as the Palestinian people to end this. Refuseniks often suffer from discrimination within their own communities. I've known Refuseniks that have been ostracized by their communities, even disinherited by their families, Refuseniks that have gone to jail for what they believe, and Refuseniks are ineligible for a number of jobs in Israel. So there's a whole slew of institutions built up to prevent Israelis from speaking out against what their government is doing. And yet they continue. Here is a Palestinian farmer picking olives with an Israeli activist in the olive harvest. I'd like to bring us back to the main outline. We've talked about restricted movement, we've talked about settlements and outposts, and down at the bottom there we've talked about Israeli activism. And I'd like to begin now talking about the wall before getting into imprisonment and, of course, resistance. So, the wall.